do we exist? Were we created with a purpose, or are we just here by chance? What are we to believe about life, faith, and worldview? Welcome to The Universe Next Door, focusing on answers to the questions we all consider. Join us as we seek to see a generation captivated and transformed by the truth of Christianity. This is The Universe Next Door.
Welcome to The Universe Next Door. I am super excited to be interviewing Brock and Garrett from the Wingfeather Saga today. But before we do that, I just wanted to give you a reminder that next Monday, a week from today, we're going to be starting our Christmas series. So we're going to be going through a number of apologetics-related topics regarding Christmas. If you have any questions, whether they be like, oh, is Christmas related to this pagan holiday or tradition? What about this thing in the Bible that I always thought was true and apparently isn't true? Whatever. If you have questions about anything Christmas related, send them now to information@apologetics.org so we can do our best to either respond to them or do an episode about it. I'm looking for interesting stuff, so I have plenty of it, but I want to see where you guys are at. Otherwise, I hope you've had a great start to your Christmas season. I'm super pumped and excited to get into that. But before we get into our interview on Wingfeather Saga, they just had a new book come out. Season 2 is starting in just a couple months here. Awesome show. If you have kids especially, watch this with your kids. It is so much better than any other leftist trash that is pretty much brainwashing our kids on TV. This is a show that it has Christian... It's almost kind of like Narnia and Lord of the Rings, to where it's an analogy but not a direct analogy. Very, very good to get your kids thinking. And it's very well done. The animation is so unique. Awesome show. So make sure you check that out. But before we get into the interview, hit follow wherever you're listening. That way you can keep up with the show. And if you hit notify, you'll be alerted of new episodes. So make sure you hit follow for our sake and for your sakes. You guys have been a huge blessing to us. If this is your first time, awesome to have you. So with that being said, let's get into our interview with Brock and Garrett. Today we have with us Brock Starnes and Garrett Taylor from the awesome book and now TV series, Wingfeather Saga. So super pumped to have you guys on. How are you?
We're good, Nick. Great. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, first of all, let me say, before we started here, we were just talking. I have some cool C.S. Lewis books. Nobody ever asks about them. And Brock was asking me, because I have some old C.S. Lewis books that I collect. I have some old Lord of the Rings. And I was just so filled with joy that somebody asked about my books. Nobody ever cares. Everyone just sees old books on the shelf and they move on, but it made my day. Now, first of all, I think it's important to have a job that you can really be invested in and that you can enjoy. And you guys must love what you do. Like, you produce a TV show. What goes into your jobs? Like, what does it look like when you show up to work?
Nick, every day is a little different making this show. We are now about 2 years into this. We did season 1, which came out last year, and now we're working on season 2 and getting started on season 3. And we've built a team around the show. And so we've hired all our animators, all our artists directly. And every day's a little bit different. It's making a show is a creative process, but it is also a process. We're in the middle of episodes are at different stages in the production, and they're kind of working their way through. I get the great privilege to help produce the show and really be involved in the lives and in the roles of our crew across departments, and so it is fun to see the work that they do and that they produce every day that ultimately contributes to the end of the show. I mean, animation is such a group effort. It involves so many different disciplines, so many different experts. And, one of the departments that is just the best to work with is with Garrett's team and the art department in establishing the visual style. And then Garrett and I got to work together. We worked together on the merchandise. So we've got, we did an Art of season 1 book, which was basically a culmination of the look and feel of season 1 and kind of the making of what all went into it. And so that's one of the joys I get to be a part of, is kind of look over everyone's shoulder and in the best way and see what are they going to create next. You know, every morning can be different in that.
Yeah. How about you, Garrett?
Yeah, it's first of all, I think that somehow this group that's come together to make this series has turned out to be a pretty special group. And that's always something to stop and reflect on, as we've all come from, you know, various places in the industry. Our team is, you know, spread out all over the world. I have artists on my team that are in Germany and Prague. And, you know, just this morning was on a Zoom call doing an art review with, you know, folks down in South America. And, so it's just amazing that this thing that started as a story in a book is now, you know, bringing a bunch of really talented artists, talented musicians, talented animators all together, and keeping everybody excited to make this thing. But yeah, every day we get to come to our desks and chat about it. And so it is, I'm glad you picked up on that, because it is a special treat for sure.
No, it definitely is. And I love every second of what I wear a few different hats, but I like wearing all of them. I like everything I get to do. And I think when you enjoy what you're doing, it really changes the way you do things and the way you produce things. And something I noticed about the Wingfeather Saga is the animation is really unique. Like, it really pops out at you. It looks different than other things that are going on. I don't know how to ask this question, because I don't know much about production and animation. I mean, setting up a camera is more than enough of a challenge for me. But what goes into that? Like, was there any kind of risk involved? Was it like, what are people going to think of this with such a unique kind of animation style? Like, what goes into a process like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it is like, our show definitely looks different than, you know, most animation that's out there right now. And that was very purposeful. I think the main driving part of that was just that we wanted a different look. We wanted this thing to look hand touched, handmade, and therefore look, you know, hand painted. And the way that we ended up being able to do that was to just actually hire artists to digitally hand paint all of the backgrounds. And so, you know, in the traditional Disney animation, like say Lion King or Aladdin, there would be artists that were painting, you know, back then it was gouache or watercolor on illustration board. And then they would bring that into their multi-plane camera and just kind of layer up these scenes with paintings. And so we're taking a lot from that tradition, but using technology and to be able to save time and to be able to do just more interesting things. So we're with our background paintings and then having 3D modeled characters with hand painted textures on them. It helps blend those characters into the painting. And then we assemble it all in the Unreal Engine, which is a game engine. And so that we're able to kind of preview it and see it all happening in real time, which is all kind of cutting edge stuff. And it is where the animation industry seems to be shifting. As computing power gets better, this kind of real-time rendering, which is something we could talk about for a long time, but we're trying to leverage all that. So first and foremost, for just visually, how can we tell the story the best way in this kind of beautiful painterly style? But then along with that, there's some cost savings, because we're able to, you know, create a world in a painting rather than building it all in 3D and texturing it and lighting it as a traditional studio would, like Pixar.
Yeah, well, you guys did a wonderful job with that. And hand-painted is what comes to mind. It really is unique in a really awesome way. And for those who may not, I know we have a number of listeners who are already watching Wingfeather Saga, but for those who may not know, can you give a brief sort of, because I know it's not a direct analogy to Christianity, and it kind of has like a Narnia, Lord of the Rings kind of feel, like you could almost put it in that category. But one of the reasons I like to have people like you guys on is because you're doing something different, and you're doing something that brings glory to God and is going to benefit children and adults, where there's so many other shows right now that, I mean, for lack of a better word, are just trash. Like, they're just filling our kids' mind with trash. They're drawing them away from God. They're drawing them away from the glory of God. could you speak a little bit to the purpose and the why to what you guys do with the Wingfeather Saga?
Go ahead, bro.
Yeah, that's great, Nick. I one of the things we've all witnessed in our own families and then seen it with other families is the way in which the books became a way to bring the family together and experience the story together. It is the big story in the Wingfeather Saga is really a family that's on the run, a family that's on a journey. The kids are discovering who they are, what their role is in the family, and how they can basically push back a great evil that's come into the world, and they ultimately play a significant role in that as the story goes on. And what we've discovered with the show is a similar trajectory. As families are rallying around it, watching it together, in a day and age where so much of the world is segmented, and individualized. What we're excited about for our own families, but also for fans, for all of us here, is that this is a show that the family can enjoy and watch together. A couple weeks ago, we had our first Feather Fest, which is the first gathering of Wingfeather fans that was hosted here in Nashville, and it was so cool to see families of all different ages come through. Our real core target is really 8 to 12 year olds and families, but at this event we had all different ages. Many came in costume associated with different characters that they love in the world. So from a missional vision perspective, that's one of the things that excites us most about Wingfeather and how people are connecting with it. There are think about allegory in Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. You think about symbolism that comes through a lot through Lord of the Rings. There's probably more symbolism, we'd say, in Wingfeather Saga. It ultimately becomes a very redemptive story. It's a very family story. There's a maker in the world, and so Christian families, especially, I think, connect deeply with this story in the same way we'd connect with the redemptive themes and Lord of the Rings. And then there are allegorical elements here and there too. And so those things come through too. So Garrett, correct me. What would you add to that?
Yeah. It is such an interesting time in animation and in entertainment, especially for kids, because there seems to be this big divide, and the bigger studios, we've all grown up watching such awesome stuff from these bigger studios. But in a way it does seem like they've kind of limited themselves to what they can make, which is odd because they should be able to make whatever they want. But just culturally, I think there are some limits that have been put on the big studios, which has left a big gap for this is nothing new that we're telling here, but just some of these classic tales of heroism, of, overcoming fear, of self-sacrifice. And it's stuff that echoes and kind of strums a chord that we can all relate to, and I think there's definitely a hunger for it, and we see that in our fan base, and it's what kind of excites us as we make this thing.
Yeah, and I don't want to get you guys in trouble with any specific names here, but yeah, a lot of the larger organizations, they were just so great at making entertainment and making movies, and then they kind of switch to ideology, especially over the last 20 years, where I think people have to understand there's hardly such thing as neutrality in movies and in TV. Everything has some sort of message. And I think that's one of the key things for families, is not just that the Wingfeather Feather Fest is an awesome name, by the way. I want to go to that. But it's not just that the Wingfeather Saga is an awesome show that's fun to watch. It is that. But it also has this deeper meaning, like you're saying, that brings families together, and while the target audience may be 8 to 12 or whatever it was you mentioned, it's like, well, parents mm-hmm. want to watch it too. It's just like when you're reading Narnia, you see all of the deeper meaning, and it's like, oh, this is really creative and this is really cool.
Yeah, it's one of the cool things we get to be a part of is Andrew Peterson, who wrote the novels, is very involved in the production of the studio. He's one of the executive producers. And so one of the joys is that the team is basically adapting that work and doing that in concert with him, which is a really rare thing for an author to be that involved on the production of a TV show. Often that's done by a total separate group. And so what we're able to bring forward is a lot of the ideas that he instilled into the book are being brought forward there. And there's new things that are being discovered and pulled forward. Chris, who's our showrunner, has done just a wonderful job kind of pulling forward and driving some themes that show up later in the series that we're pulling forward. Some characters get pulled forward a little bit to set that up to then for folks to experience even more as the series goes on. But it's a rare thing to be able to, one, adapt a book, but to be able to do it with the author, there's a certain richness that the series has and that benefits from because of Andrew's involvement there too.
I think one thing to add to all this too is just, normally stories like this, because they are so, like I mentioned, the bigger studios are afraid of certain things that they're going to, lean too close to one, audience base. So it's difficult to get these types of shows produced in this day and age, because, you've got your Netflixes and your streaming platforms that would normally take this and fund it. Our show, another really special facet of it is that it's all crowdfunded for the first season. And so it literally is the fans of the books that put their money forward to allow, Brock and I to have a job and to spend every day, pouring ourselves into this. And so if you watch through our end credits, every single name of crowdfunding investors is listed there. Wow. And it's a really special way to just be connected to our audience in a way that's just new for the entertainment industry.
Yeah, because it's almost like it's working backwards. Instead of having to prove to people that this is a good idea, it's like they already know it's a good idea and they want to contribute to it and be part of it. I remember we had Andrew and Chris on it must have been over a year ago now, right, before the show launched, because they were just talking about doing the first pilot episode. And I watched the trailer and it was like, whoa, this looks so cool. They had that big dragon thing and everything. But yeah, it's like people actually get to take part in it. And I know it shattered records, which was really cool. But I think people need more shows like this. People need more TV shows that have such purpose to them. And I did want to ask you, since you work so closely with Andrew, what is it like taking a book? Like, I'm sure it's very personal to him. I'm sure he's imagined things a certain way for so long. But what's it like to try to take those and make it into something that's visual? Like to actually literally visualize it, to take something just imaginary and make it into something concrete. Like, what is that like?
Yeah, that's a great question. That it is funny, because you would think that, this guy wrote the books, Andrew, and we hang out with him all the time. He's part of this whole scene. But you would be amazed how many times we bring up like, oh, hey, what does a potato look like? Which is a vegetable that grows in this world. And he's like, I have no idea. We have to go out to the fan base to kind of pick their brains on what a potato is. So there's a lot of that where, when he's writing it out, it just occupies the it helps tell the story. But then when it does come down to, having to actually visualize this stuff, there's a lot of questions to be answered. And sometimes he's adamant, he's totally thought through, like we just designed Fin Gap Falls in season 2, which is just this epic waterfall that it goes into the ocean, and he had some very specific ideas on that, and he actually sketched it out, so he's got some real drawing abilities and artistic talents which have come into play. And so he'll draw stuff out if it hasn't been visualized yet and it's in his head. Thankfully, a lot of the the books have illustrations in them. So we'll pull from that as a starting point, because they've obviously had these conversations in the publication of the books. But there are huge gaps that we just have to brainstorm. And so we have a, you know, review channel on Slack where we just throw all of our designs up in front of Andrew. And for the most part, he's like, yeah, that looks awesome. And occasionally he'll push back, but it's a fun thing to kind of just bring his world to life and have him be there to witness it.
Yeah. Do you guys ever like someone brings an idea of like a potato looks like this, and then you all just fight over it. Like no one can agree. And someone gets fired in the process. It's like, that's not what it looks like.
Probably definitely not. Yeah, you, the fans are the ones that are so adamant about this stuff, because you know they live in it, and so we definitely go out to them occasionally and pick the brains of you know, we've got fans on our staff obviously, and we leverage that heavily.
That's so cool, because it's like their imagination gets to be part of it too. And speaking of that, how important is imagination to Christianity? Like how important is it to have that sort of like a category of being able to use your imagination as something that God gave us? Like, do you guys ever think about that?
That's a great question, Nick. That's a, so cool to reflect on. Like both Garrett and I and several of our staff have young kids, and I love to discover, I love to see kind of what are they going to go get into? How are they going to go play? How are they going to draw something or imagine something that I could have never initiated in them? They just kind of came up to it in it themselves. But imagination is, it's just such a powerful thing. It's and as is storytelling. You know, I was reminded the other day of just like how great is the opening line of the Bible, in the beginning, just like as a storytelling thing. You know, it's totally, I need to hear more. What happens after this? And what is cool about this profession, or what I love observing about this, is seeing people imagine this world, imagine and create new things, because directly correlated is just the creation of new things. So there are, like Garrett mentioned, I mean, there are props and characters and locations that have never been visualized within the Wingfeather saga that the team is using their experience and their imagination to create these spaces that fans are then able to imagine themselves in and play in. And this is one of the kind of byproducts of the show that's so fun, is like at Featherfest, not to harp on that too much, is we've got fans who have created their own costumes and are imagining themselves in this world and playing as these characters. Anyway, so it's been really fun to see that.
Now, yeah, as you kind of mentioned, I think creativity is something that God has given us. It's something that we can utilize. And it's one of the many ways that we get to shadow and in some ways be like him. He's given us the ability to do that. So what is it like to create sort of something that hasn't been seen and hasn't existed, to create a new location or a new character that nobody's seen yet? What is that like, and what kind of goes into it?
Yeah, it's a fun job. And you know, I designed a lot of environments and characters at Pixar for the last 11 years prior to this. And, you know, I always thought this is the ideal role at Pixar. 'Cause I didn't know, you go into art and you could be an animator, you could be a lighter, a modeler, a writer, a storyboard artist. There's just endless slots as artists that you can go into. And I found myself in the design department, and now heading up the design department here on the Wingfeather saga. And it really is a fun little area to exist in, because of the questions like we touched on earlier, like what does this area look like, or what does this character look like? And yeah, talking about imagination and creativity, you're basically bringing these things to life. You have that opportunity. And so for an environment, you're building a world. And this is a world that, you know, you're going to be inviting your audience into over the course of either a film, or in our case, a TV series, which will be, you know, a lot of hours and a lot of just moments that hopefully families are sharing together. And so when it comes to, designing that a world, say, it's, you want it to have a certain level of believability, and which means that there's parallels to the world that we live in, the materials that it's made out of, the kind of the way that trees grow and grass bends in the wind, and the way leaves pile up against old fences, all of that stuff, is that believability that kind of draws us in. We say, oh, this could be a place we could go visit. And that's just the visual aspect, but then there's also the storytelling aspect. You know, is this character going to lean against this wall? There's a quiet conversation that has to happen in this alleyway. And so, it must be in shadow, and it should be a certain width so that it feels private. All those things, are conversations that we have, and is just fun to do. And then characters, it's almost harder to do characters because they're a person. And so, just the slant of an eye can make someone look, more devious. So you're trying to get all these kind of character traits. Is this person nice? Are they trustworthy? Are they a bad guy? Are they going to be a bad guy? And how do you kind of foreshadow that in their design? And there's lots of tricks to do that. There's lots of, thankfully, fairly agreed upon techniques for doing all this. It's not as subjective as it could be. Like if we see a bad guy in any animated film, hopefully we know that, that's the evil guy. Mm-hmm. And, so yeah, it's a great place, and it just brings up lots of great conversations amongst our team. So thankful for the team that has come together to help me on the art department. One of our character designers and background painters actually is the son of the author, so Aiden Peterson, and he did a bit of the illustrations in the books as well. So yeah, we're keeping it in the family.
Yeah, I play a lot of music. I write my own music, and I'm just thinking as you're talking how important detail is to try to communicate something. And I was thinking, I watched this thing about Star Wars, how they made Star Wars. And I think it was George Lucas saying that when they made Star Wars, like all the other shows about space, like Star Trek and all that kind of stuff, everything was always really minimalistic. Like it was just the spaceship was like a hallway with lights and nothing in it. And so they were like, well, we wanted to make it more realistic. So that's why when you watch Star Wars, there's always like junk piled up in the corners and everything. Like they thought about all those details. And I think it just goes such a long way. Are you guys like, are you constantly just observing everything, like thinking about how you can incorporate it? Or is it like, do you ever shut your brain off?
No, it is that. I was just having a conversation with one of our background painters earlier today, and he just watched the new Miyazaki movie, which is a Japanese animation. And he was saying that he couldn't stop just looking at the backgrounds the whole time, which was kind of frustrating to him as a background painter. But yeah, once you're in it, you just start looking at, not only films, but you go on walks. It's just like, oh, that's interesting how that tree is growing, or, look at the reflection on that water. Which is great. I mean, anything that can draw us back to God's design is a blessing.
Yeah. What about you, Brock? Do you ever get overwhelmed thinking about details?
There's so many details that go into the show and into every aspect of it. Both the making of the show and then the finished product itself. So one of the things that has been cool to be a part of and to witness is the way in which our, the detail that comes together in our departments. One of the, and this is just zooming back bigger pictures. Animation is made up of all these different disciplines. And then in the final stages of making the show, they all come together and they all have to kind of fit together like a puzzle piece. And there's different, techniques that Garrett was talking about, that allow us to ensure that they all fit together when they come together at the end. And then there's, different cheats and different ways to make it work. But there, it is it is amazing that like such a collaborative process can produce such a specific outcome and do that so well. And there's people along the way that are guiding that process, but you know, most of the time when I think about something that's really detailed, it can be done with an individual that does that, produces that, and sees that all the way through. Animation involves that, but it also involves the detail of all these different people coming together to rally around it.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Nick, I don't know if that really answers your question, but that...
No, it does.
But it's something that we've been witnessing that has been neat to see.
It does, and it reminds me of like the concept of the body of Christ, because you're saying you have all of these different people, all of these different details, but everyone has different giftings, different things they're good at, and somehow they're able to all come together to create one thing. I mean, it's just like I'm mind blown about how that actually happens, physically or spiritually. I mean, I think that's really cool. And I did want to ask you, so a year ago, I had Andrew and Chris on. They talked about the crowdfunding, how big of a deal it was. They were just blown away by the results. And they were just starting the show. Like the first episode was just launching. So since then, you're getting ready for season two now. Where has the show gone in the past year or so? Like, have you guys just been overwhelmed by the response? What is the audience response like? Clearly, you've said there's a lot of people who really follow the show. They dress up for it. They contribute to it with the, what was it? Potato? Forget how to say it, but so what has the response been like, and how has the show sort of grown in the last year or so, just everything involved with it?
Yeah, so we one of the cool aspects of this show is we're partnered with Angel Studios, which is our distributor, and they before this show they launched The Chosen, they launched Dry Bar Comedy, and so they've grown really, or been a part of growing really significant brands through kind of a new way of distribution, which is really working, like Garrett was saying, working directly with the audience. And so we launched on their platform last December. The first three episodes came out, and then the second three came out in the spring in February and March last year. And the show became the second most watched show on their platform and the largest release of a new show. And so it has been so cool to see the fans of the books gravitate and be able to watch it on Angel Studios, but a whole new audience too, come and experience the show who previously weren't exposed to it. And now with season two growing, we're actually starting to bring the show to other platforms and other spaces. And so we haven't yet announced the release date for season two, but that announcement will be coming soon. Yeah, can't wait for the fans to be able to experience those episodes, and then things like the DVD and other ways to buy it digitally have become available this year, where the show is just more and more accessible to people where they're at, and even in the language they're at. Shows in Spanish and Portuguese now, and we're looking to expand in other languages too, and so it's when you think about growing the audience and kind of making it accessible, that's a whole nother job and endeavor. And we're so glad to be partnered with Angel Studios and see them continue to kind of nurture that process. But we also are excited that there's a lot of opportunity ahead too. And so we're excited by the fans that are engaged too, but we also mindful that there's a lot of fans or a lot of families out there who would love to experience the show who are not aware of it. And this is what's so great about talking to you, Nick, trying to let people know this exists and it's available to be enjoyed and to be experienced by the whole family.
Awesome. And where can people go if they want to watch it tonight, season one?
You can go to angel.com/wingfeather. And that will link you to the show. It'll link you to the app. You can download a TV app if you use Apple TV or you use Roku or any of those other platforms, or get it on mobile. There's a mobile app there too. You can also get the DVD. It's on Amazon. The digital is on Amazon or iTunes. It's at a number of retailers as well too, if you just Google the Wingfeather Saga. And so yeah, so it's available in a couple of those places. If you want a quick just preview of the show, there are several clips on YouTube. And so you can go to YouTube and search Wing Feather Saga. And just a couple of weeks ago, we released a couple new trailers for season one that give you about, within a couple minutes, gives you a good handle on kind of what the adventure looks like over the first six episodes.
Awesome. So I'll put that down there, and then I'll put the angel.com link for the show if people want to go check that out. Make sure you watch it. And also, lastly, where can I go buy that sweatshirt? I really love that sweatshirt.
This is an older sweatshirt of ours, but there is a new one, a new green one. And one of the ones that we really like is there's one of Lily on the Cliff with the dragon. And all those are on, you can go to wingfeather.com/store. And that'll actually link you to our official store, which is hosted on shop.angel.com, and get the merch there.
Awesome.
Yeah. Lots of cool stuff in that store now. Yeah. Tons of,
yeah.
We've even got some stuffed animals and some cool stuff.
Oh, cool. Well, I'll go ahead and I'll put that down in the description. Thank you guys so much, Brock and Garrett, again, for joining us on the Universe Next Door. Can't wait for season two.
Yeah, us too. Thanks, Nick, for having us. Yeah, good to be with you. Nick.
Appreciate it.
I hope you've enjoyed this interview. Make sure to check out the Wing Feather Saga TV show. And also, send your questions about anything regarding Christmas time, whether it be pagan stuff, whether it be whether or not stuff is in the Bible regarding Christmas. Send them to information@apologetics.org so we can use them in our upcoming series. And otherwise, we'll see you back here Tuesday night next week at 6 p.m.